Jesus our Mediator. We will be approaching the subject of the great divide that exists between God and this fallen planet. And the whole thrust will be to see how Jesus, as the Mediator, brought about a bridging of this great gulf and a reconciliation of those who have been separated from God. The earth is in rebellion under Satan. Every human being has sinned, and God has provided the Mediator. This is an activity in which man has nothing to do. It's a generous approach by the Deity Himself, ready to meet fallen humanity where they are. God has to sift His followers to see those who are on His side and those who are not. He must expose the rebel. He must clean up the universe. He must reestablish the earth as He created it. We are going to study the details of how God brings this about and finally vindicates His character as He demonstrates the truthfulness of His assertion that only righteousness is a viable state. The Great Gulf. How was this great gulf originally formed between God and man? The prophet puts his finger right on the cause. Your iniquities, he says, have separated you between God's plan and put you on the side of Satan's plan. Your sins have hid God's face from you, that He will not hear. The end of Genesis chapter 3 pictures God as divorcing mankind. He drives out Adam and Eve. And this, as in the case of Abraham's requirement to drive out the bondwoman, is the declaration of divorce. And the rest of the Bible tells us how God sought to bring back this separated bride, the human family, the church on earth, until the marriage and the marriage supper of the Lamb is finally attained. Part number one, God is holy. Because a holy God can only be approached by a holy people or a holy person, as soon as man sinned and lost his holiness, he was separated from God. And throughout the long story of the plan of salvation, God has continually given humanity visions of His holiness. An example of this is found in the first few verses of Isaiah 6. A tragedy had intensified the need for a vision of God. The king had died. The prophet who had relied upon his help was now distraught. And so God showed him that when human help fails, king might die, there is yet a vision, and we can see God surrounded by cherubim and seraphim, representatives of triumphant humanity, close to His throne, singing to the Trinity, "Holy, holy, holy." And this vision gives to us a sense of our great need. Isaiah, speaking for humanity, says, "I am a man of unclean lips." And the Lord immediately commanded one of His servants to bring a live coal from off the altar to cleanse mankind. Now here we get a picture, tragedy, separation from God, a vision granted by deity, man's response, "Be merciful to me, a sinner," and God's immediately compliance of cleansing. So while there is a gift, a gulf, there is also a gift of cleansing. While there is separation, there is also a provision that God is making continually to bridge the gulf and bring man back into the ideal relationship that God designs for him. Part number two. Another factor that makes this great gulf a great reality is the difference between the thinking of God and the thinking of man. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways. Your thoughts are not my thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. So the Lord is calling attention, and this section of the lesson emphasizes this point, that we have got to get our thoughts right with God. Our thinking, that upon which we concentrate our mental activities. Sometimes we are led into the delusion that we cannot help thinking the way we do and on the topics upon which we think, but we can. And God wishes us to bring every thought into captivity to his will. He wishes to bring our imaginations away from evil continually to righteousness continually. As the apostle appealed to the Philippian believers, we must sort out, sift out whatever is good, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is just, whatever is true, and then decide to think on these things. So in this section, God is calling upon us to realize that our thoughts must become his thoughts by a conscious effort of our human will, supported by his grace, if we are going to span this gulf. Part number three. This kind of thinking is the product of the fact that we have sinned. All have sinned. All are shapen in iniquity. All are conceived to sorrow and to death as a result of their sins. Paul uses the figure of speech of flesh. And by that he means all bodily functions and desires. We are said to have five senses. It is through these senses that Satan appeals to us. And it's through these senses that Satan has destroyed mankind. God appeals too through these senses. And he wishes to penetrate our thinking, our physical, mental, intellectual, intelligent kind of living by his ideas through the power of his Spirit. Every soul that refuses to give himself to God is under the control of another power. He is not his own man. He has yielded himself to Satan. His thoughts, the impulses of his body are now controlled by an alien agency. He functions on an animal level. God wishes man to realize this, so that man may say, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner, and you take over my life, which I now yield to you. Part number four. Since man has sinned, since man cannot think God's thoughts, since he is not his own man, he is in a state of rebellion against God. Part number four deals with humanity as a rebel against God's will and purpose. A rebel is active. He is aggressive. The carnal mind, the fleshly mind, the life on an animal level is an enmity against God. It is hostile to the things of God. It refuses to be subject to the law of God. Now, when I say this, I think some of you who are listening are going to say, no, I don't agree with this. I would really like to be on God's side, but I can't help it. I submit at this point that it is because we want to be rebels against God that we are. Every sin that we commit, we want to commit. And we will never gain forgiveness, we'll never gain victory till we acknowledge this. till we confess in its specific details and take the guilt of every wrong that we do. As long as we make excuses, as long as we say we can't help it, circumstances, heredity, environment, all the rest of it are the factors that make us sin, we will stay in sin. But the moment we come to the point where we say, Lord, I acknowledge that I sin. I make no excuse. I do it because I want to do it. I do it because I've educated myself to do it. Take away the want. Take away this desire within me. And give me new thoughts and a new creation and a new desire. I want to do it. I can't stop doing it. But I acknowledge that you can help me and you can give me strength. Now, if we do that, then God will bridge this gulf and he will change rebels into worshippers, into faithful servants of him. It's only when we acknowledge that we are dead, that we are alienated, that we are enemies in our minds, ready to do wicked works, that we are subject to wrath, that we are disobedient, and all this is our fault. Until we come to that state, we will never gain the victory. But the moment we come to that state, and without any excuse, say, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. Take over in my life. That moment is the moment of the beginning of triumph. Part number 5. Morality alone can never bridge the gulf. That is, human effort, human thinking, human planning, human devising, human disciplining will never make us right, for the simple reason that we sinned yesterday, or this morning, or 10 minutes ago. Whatever I do from now to the end of my life can never undo that. It takes God and his mercy to give to us Jesus Christ to take care of the sins of the past. I've asked so many folk to whom I've given Bible studies in their 50s and 60s, how many Sabbaths have you broken in your life? Remember that that man in Moses' time was stoned for breaking one Sabbath. God has been merciful to you. 52 Sabbaths a year for 60 years that you have broken. How much tithe do you owe the Lord? How much offerings do you owe him? How many unclean things have you eaten? God in his mercy has spared you to this moment. Then as we as sinners begin to realize that anything that we do from now for a billion years can never undo the past, that we are doomed, that we are lost, then we come to God joyously. The law has pointed out our sin. It's shown us that we are sinners. But Jesus Christ comes to us in vision through the Spirit. I have died for you on Calvary. I have taken care of your past. I have paid your debt. You accept me and I will live in you and through you. Part number 6, focus and application of this first week's lesson. We must respond. The serpent had bitten men and women and children in Israel. The remedy was provided. They had to turn their eyes and look with faith. They could have turned their back on the brazen serpent and they would have died. So the point that is being emphasized, on which the focus is made, is that in Jesus, God has made the provision. As we look to him, as we look to his program, we see that our carnality became victory in him, our evil thoughts were in his perfection made perfect, that in his humanity we see exemplified what we may be, and we say, Lord, live out thy life within me.